Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Women of color have long been underrepresented in the world of ballet. Many have made history, including Janet Collins, the first Black prima ballerina, and Maria Tallchief, the country's first Native American prima ballerina, both blazing trails in the mid-20th century. The challenges remain. Misty Copeland became the first Black principal dancer at the American Ballet Theater just 10 years ago. San Antonio dancer, performer, and author Stina Hernandez has taken her own experiences as a dancer of color to write her debut children's book, Lupita's Brown Ballet Slippers. She joins us on Fronteras to tell us about her journey from childhood ballet classes in West Texas to New York to San Antonio to children's book author.
Yes, so I started dancing tap, jazz, and ballet at the age of 3.
Wow.
And my mom was a single-parent mom, and I have two sisters. They're 12 and 14 years older than me, so they were already out of the house. They had gone to college, and so it was just me and my mom. And she wanted to keep me busy, and so she sent me to dance classes, and I was going to dance almost every day of the week. I danced through middle school and high school. And I was the only Latina in my dance company. So we had to audition to be a part of the dance company.
And tell us where this was happening.
This was in Odessa, Texas, where I grew up. Then in high school, I remember discovering the theater at Permian High School. And I fell in love with it, like I said. So much that when I discovered musicals, where dancing, singing, and acting come together, I was blown away. I was just like, okay, I want to do this like forever. And I did go to Texas Tech University after high school, and I studied music, theater, and dance, and I graduated with the BFA from Texas Tech. I went to New York after I graduated, and I did start auditioning. I had a manager and would send me out on different auditions and things like that. Lots of rejections. So that's something that, you know, continues to today as a picture book children's author. So that was something that was, you know, really eye-opening. That's how it happened. I went to New York and I started auditioning. But then soon after, I did start landing roles, small roles on soap operas. I got, like, it's called Fives and Under when you have a few lines. So I was like a waitress on All My Children and some of the other soap operas that filmed there. And then I did lots of infomercials and commercials and things like that. So I was kind of steady, always working. And then one of the jobs that I got that lasted a very long time was with the USO, United Service Organization. And so we did go to like lots of military bases and veterans hospitals, and sort of in the eye of Bob Hope, to carry on the tradition of lifting the morale of our military. And so that's kind of what I got into. And that we called that an ongoing part-time job, because like if there were parades and Memorial Day things, you know, that's when we would get more busy and things like that. So I was the lady in red, where we would do like the three-part harmony, like he was a boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B, that kind of, you know, that kind of thing with our little outfits. And it was really a really great experience. So I did that. And that helped me, you know, keep going and, you know, helped me chug along in my journey, I guess. So then I kept auditioning, and then eventually I got Rent, the Broadway tour. And so that was on tour. So I was going and traveling a lot before I had children. And then a little after, I did get a part with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra as a vocalist. And that was, I toured with them for about 3 years. And I was on the West Coast tour. We came to San Antonio. It was awesome.
Great.
Yes, it was. It was such a fun tour. Really fun.
Well, you touched on when you were a child and you were taking dance classes, mm-hmm. that you were the only Latina there. And I don't know if at that time you felt that you were the only one there, or if that was something that carried on as you went on your career. Can you talk about that feeling and maybe how it maybe has sort of followed you on your path?
Yeah, I don't ever really remember feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm the only, you know, Latina or brown kid here today. You know, I never felt, nobody ever made me feel, if anything, I remember feeling like I was also like a little bit thicker, you know, legs and everything. You know, as we look at the dancers, the way that the form is, you know, supposed to be, right? Those lines, those long lines. And I'm only like 5'2". So that was something that, you know, I didn't, you know, if I felt anything, I felt good about that. I stood out in a good way. So for me, I felt always positive when I was on stage. But with the dance company, we started doing different conferences and competitions all over Texas and then nationally as well. We did go to New York for the Stars of Tomorrow dance competitions at the time. And that is when I really started to see, maybe I was like middle school, high school, where I started to see more diversity. You know, and I thought, oh, there's other girls like me, you know, and other guys too, dancers that look like me. And that's really when I started thinking about those things. And that is around the first time when I saw a group of dancers that were pancaking their ballet slippers.
So talk a little bit about pancaking.
Yes. So I didn't know what it was at the time. I mean, how would I know that, right? Until I kind of put it together and I figured out kind of quickly what it was. But pancaking is when a dancer of darker skin tone will take their matching foundation and apply it to the slipper. And that is so that line, so you don't have that light slipper on the darker skin, sort of cutting it off. Because in ballet specifically, everything is about those long, elongated lines. And we work so hard for that, whatever height we are or anything like that, especially from the stage, you know, those beautiful lines are so important and make the sport so unique and so elegantly beautiful. And so the traditional pink ballet slipper would be, you know, coated with that. Then when you put it on, you know, you have that full elongated line. So yeah, that becomes the main inspiration for my book.
Stina Hernandez is a dancer, performer, and children's book author. Her debut picture book, Lupita's Brown Ballet Slippers, was released last year by Beaming Books. When we come back, Lupita's Brown Ballet Slippers began with a contest entry.
I entered that contest and with a little version of the ballet slippers, a pink one and a brown one, talking to one another in a factory. And they were discussing like, well, you know, why are you brown? And why, you know, and so they had this little conversation.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Countless little girls flood ballet classes every year. They slip on their pink tights and slippers and prepare to perform for their families at dance recitals. Why pink? One of the country's premier ballerinas, Misty Copeland, explains in a video short posted on YouTube.
I've been coloring my own pointe shoes, my skin color, since I started dancing. They come, you know, in European pink, which is a very interesting choice of words. And I think that that's kind of a subtle and subconscious way of, I think, excluding brown and black dancers. I think that's something that I'm constantly fighting for, you know, more inclusion. But one day we won't have to pancake our own pointe shoes. They'll come in our skin color.
Copeland is black. Many of these little girls taking ballet classes have black and brown skin, and they wear European pink-colored tights and slippers. Dancer, performer, and writer Stina Hernandez has written a children's book about a young Latina who realizes her pink slippers break the long lines that ballet dancers are supposed to have from tip to toe. The character Lupita learns about pancaking, putting skin tone colored makeup on her shoes to create that illusion. Lupita works odd jobs around the neighborhood to earn enough money to buy her own specialty brown pair of slippers. And as Stina Hernandez writes during Lupita's ballet recital, Lupita's shoes were brilliantly brown and they danced with her now. Hernandez started ballet at age 3 and remembers watching other dancers pancake their shoes as she got older. She says she was inspired to write Lupita's brown ballet slippers to highlight the importance of diversity in dance.
So about the end of 2020, I would say, is when I really decided that I wanted to write children's stories. Around that time, I was visiting our local library a lot with my kids and reading lots of books with them. And they would have a little class with the story time and a little craft and everything like that. So that's when I really fell in love with children's stories. And I would animate and read the stories to my kids and they would come alive and they would really enjoy our time reading. But then I found that they would be like asleep, you know, like they're completely done with the story. And I'm still up reading these stories by myself. And I discovered that picture books really are for everyone, not just children, and that they do carry big themes and big ideas, you know, that are for everyone, but that children do understand. But then I think in about 2021, there was a writing contest after I had gotten involved in the writing community, in the kidlit community, we call it. There was a writing contest. And it was held, and it still is. She does it annually, Sunwrite Fun, and it's held by author Karen Greenwald. And it calls for informational fiction. And I didn't really know what that was. I was like, but I wanted to enter. I wanted to participate. I wanted to improve my writing. I had already written a few little, you know, manuscripts and things at that time and was sharing them with my critique partners. But I wanted to enter, and so I started researching informational fiction, and that was the beginning of Lupita. So that entry, which wouldn't be a full picture book, it was like 150 words, I entered that contest and with a little version of the ballet slippers, a pink one and a brown one talking to one another in a factory. And they were discussing like, well, you know, why are you brown? And why, you know, and so they had this little conversation, but that was the beginning of it. And then at the end, I put a little bit about pancaking slippers and Misty Copeland and how, you know, she's such an inspiration to me, of course. Yeah. And so that was how the idea started. And I didn't win the contest. But author Karen Greenwald did message me after, and she was like, this is a really cool idea, and I never knew that about ballet slippers. Maybe you could turn this into a full picture book. And that was it. Like, I think that night I stayed up till probably 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning, drafting out my first full picture book of Lupita Slippers, it was originally called.
So did Lupita and you have, you know, similar experiences? Did you find a lot of yourself in this story?
Absolutely, yes. I drew definitely. Not so much that I took my mom's makeup, I want to say the whole book, but and tried the pancaking. But yes, specifically being the only Hispanic as the illustrations portray, that for sure. And yeah, just drawing from that whole experience. Yes, Lupita is definitely drawn from my experiences.
So what was it like working with an illustrator? How did you come across Melissa Castillo, and how did you work together? Were you happy with how she portrayed Lupita? And I'm just curious to see how that relationship is, because I know that sometimes authors and illustrators don't normally get to collaborate. So I'm wondering what the relationship was for you.
That's exactly right, what you said at the end. We never have met, actually. So this is something that when I was first learning about how picture books are put together, that was really interesting to me, because I thought, oh, they're like meeting every day and they're talking about their words versus their pictures. And that really is not the case. This is left up to Beaming Books, who is my publisher, and they kind of gave me suggestions. So it does depend on the publisher. They did give me a few ideas on an illustrator, and then we checked their availability and if they're interested in the project. And Melissa Castillo said yes. And I was so excited because her illustrations, yes, I absolutely love, especially the cover. I don't know how it could be any better. It's so perfect. And I'll forever be in love, especially with the cover. And of course, all of the illustrations are so beautiful. But yeah, we've never met, and we don't really work at all as far as like putting the text with the illustrations. That's all left up to her and the illustrator designer at Beaming Books. I guess they have a senior illustration designer who works closely with her to finalize everything. So yeah, that is very interesting. A lot of people are like, what? You know, they don't believe me, my friends, you know, who may not be.
I was surprised when I first found out the first time too.
Yes, but that is mostly how it does work in traditional publishing. So it really does become this beautiful project just by a team and a lot of people working on it to make it, you know, beautiful.
I mean, I would imagine that for you, seeing the pictures put to your words, that it's almost like a rediscovery process for you. Like, oh, this is how somebody is interpreting these words into these illustrations.
That's exactly right. Yeah. The very first time I saw her rough sketches, I was like, wow. And they called it rough, but it was just perfect. I was like, wow, that is so true. Like how the words come alive with the pictures, and it's a fun process.
Yeah, and I mean, and the pictures are almost as important as the words. I mean, I remember when I was reading children's books, that we didn't have the large books, I don't think, when we were very little. We had smaller ones, but they were still illustrated. And I remember stopping my mom from turning the pages so that I can look at the pictures and study the pictures, and then, okay, let's turn. And you and children are just, you know, absorbed by all the colors and all the imagery and all the things that maybe a grown-up might oversee. The children are taking it all in.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, I agree. Especially since I didn't grow up really seeing books that featured characters that look like me or had identities, you know, different identities. So like when you were describing looking at books when you were young, I can remember that too. But now I see my kids, and there are thankfully more books with diversity and things like that. And I see them and I'm like, oh, that's so cool that they get to have a book, you know, like that they can see themselves in. And that became really, really, really important to me. That is one of the most important things to me as I continue writing.
And now that you're kind of in this area of being a children's book author and being able to share these stories of diversity, there is an attack on diversity right now. And do you fear that is going to limit the audience to books like yours?
Yeah, it's really tough times, right? And I don't think so. I think more than ever, families, people, especially in San Antonio, are hungry for these kinds of books. Even if you're not, you know, brown like Lupita, you know, I've had families who aren't, you know, and they come up to me and they're like, wow, I feel like I never knew that, like I said before, about pancaking. And this is so important, an important message to share for everybody, no matter what background, you know, that you come from. So no, I don't think so. I think more than ever, if anything, we are going to look for these kinds of books, and we're going to gravitate toward learning, because books can do that. Books can open us to one another's experiences. And, you know, your walk of life and your experiences in life are different than mine. And that's why I want to pick up a book that, you know, I may not know about. And I want to learn that. And I think if we can be open to those things and continue to open our hearts and our minds that way, nobody can tell us, you know, that we can't create those kinds of stories.
But now that you've been bitten by the bug, what are you planning your next one?
Oh, yes. So I do have lots of manuscripts. Back to the rejection thing. So, yes, I am querying. I am writing new stories. And I have one manuscript. I have lots of manuscripts, like I said, but one in particular. And I'm like, please, please, please. Right now I am querying both agents and editors. And so I do hope for the next book, like you said, to continue these kinds of conversations that I do feel like are very important now more than ever.
Stina Hernandez is the author of the children's picture book, Lupita's Brown Ballet Slippers. It's illustrated by the Los Angeles-based artist, Melissa Castillo. Hernandez is a San Antonio-based dancer and performer who's performed with the Rent Broadway Tour, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and the USO. See images from the book and Stina's Brown Ballet Slippers at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.